We are holding on Kufchav Ches Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah that if a woman is giving birth on Shabbos, then you help with the birth and you do whatever is necessary. You mechallel Shabbos for her. So more about that. Amud of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Chaya, a woman who's giving birth, kol zman sha kever pasuach, as long as the kever, meaning the womb, is open. We've had before that sometimes the Chachamim use the word kever for the womb. One reason, I guess, could be because al derech, like you have the expression Eev uses, I came without anything from my mother's womb. I'm going to return there, meaning after 120. So therefore, like, there's a certain connection between the kever and the womb. Actually, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that mentions that a thing, a proof for tchias emesim, what goes into the womb when a couple has relations is done in silence, but then when the baby comes out, there's a lot of noise. So the same thing, the earth, people go in there and there's a lot of noise because you have everybody's mourning and everything for the person who passed away. When Mashiach comes and the Mesim are revived, then you're also going to have a lot of noise and it's going to be a very famous thing. Anyway, so as long as the kever.
It's so surprising to name Kever the organ that gives life. I mean, I just don't
Right, but
understand
that's
that.
not.
It
Right, but I guess that's the comparison. In other words, is in a certain sense the kever itself eventually is going to be giving life as well because there's going to be tchias emesim. And as I said,
But
there's
it's
actually a
giving
Gemara in
life
Sanhedrin.
right now.
Fine, but the Gemara, fine. So okay, so all it is in other words, so to speak, the pregnancy that you have that a person is buried in the earth and eventually there's going to be tchias emesim. So to speak, you could say it's a much longer pregnancy. But there is actually a Gemara in Sanhedrin that make that points out a pasuk that compares the two of them. And says that from there we see something about tchias emesim. Okay, anyway, so kol zman sha kever pasuach. So as long as the kever is open, bein omer tzrichani, bein loy omer tzrichani. Whether the woman says I need you to be mechallel Shabbos or to do different things for me, or whether she doesn't say tzrichani, ein mechallel allows a Shabbos. Either way, you mechallel Shabbos to do whatever you need for her. Nistama kever, once the womb is closed, and we're going to see soon how much the time that is, bein omer tzrichani, bein loy omer tzrichani, then whether she says I need it or whether she doesn't say I need it, ein mechallel unless Shabbos, then already you're not mechallel Shabbos for her. Now, in those cases, when you're not mechallel Shabbos, the din is, as we're going to learn later on, that instead you have goyim do things for her. So to have Jews be mechallel Shabbos for her at this point, that you can't anymore because it's already after nistama kever. But if she still needs something, then you can have it done by a goy. There are actually different gersois over here. In the first one, kol zman sha kever pasuach, when you have whether she says tzrichani or she doesn't say tzrichani, there's a different gersa that even if, and this is accepted halacha, even if she says eini tzricha, even if she says I don't need it, nevertheless, during the time that kever pasuach, we still say never mind, she needs it whether she knows it or not. And in the second one, when we're saying after nistama kever, the Rosh's gersa it brings on the side over here is that. If she says tzrichani, then we are mechallel Shabbos for her still, because even though nistama kever, if she says I need it, then nevertheless we still take her at her word that she knows what she needs. You have similar concepts, by the way, when it comes to a sick person in general on Shabbos, on Yom Kippur, that when the sick person themselves says I need something during the time, or in this case the woman is giving birth, that to a certain extent, you still say that in that case, okay, they know what they're talking about. They know maybe even better than the doctors or whatever, and therefore you listen to them and do what you need. So if she says that, then you're mechallel. If not, then you're not. Okay, that was the first version. That was Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Rav Ashi Masni Hachi. So that was how Rav Ashi learned the statement. Mazutra Masni Hachi. Mazutra learned it differently. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Chaya Kol Zman Sha Kever Pasuach. As long as the kever is open, Bein Omer Tzrichani or Bein Omer Ein Tzrichani, Mechal Lemelas Shabbos. Whether she said I need it or whether she said I don't, then you're Mechal Shabbos. Okay, so far that's the same as the first version. Nistama kever, omrat tzrichani mechallel on alanas Shabbos. If she says tzrichani, then you mechallel Shabbos. Loy omrat tzrichani ain mechallel on alanas Shabbos. If she doesn't say I need it, then you're not mechallel Shabbos. Again, the Rosh has a different. So now, so far, this second version sounds like the girsa we had before from the Rosh. So the Rosh, in fact, has a different girsa over here as well. That if she specifically says I don't need. At this point, when nistama kever, only then do you not mechallel Shabbos for her. But if she doesn't say one way or the other, then you're still mechallel Shabbos for her. Amalei Ravina Lamereimer, so Ravina asked Meremer, Mazutra Masni Lakola. So far we have Mazutra who's learning in a more lenient way, because either according to the version that we have according to us in our Gemara, which is, again, what we have in front of us in our Gemara is that even after Nistama Kever, if she says Tzrichani Wumachal Shabbos, or according to the Rosh's Girsa, that even that even when Nistama Kever, if she doesn't say I need it, we're still Machal Shabbos. Rav Ashi Masna L'chomer. Rav Ashi's version, meanwhile, was more machmer, because according to the version we have in front of us, if she said either way, we're not Machal Shabbos once Nistama Kever, and according to the Rosh's Girsa, which by the way is brought Halacha, then. If she says I need, if she specifically says I need it, then we are Machal Shabbos. So we have a Kula and a Chumra. Hilchas HaKaman, who is the Halacha like? Amalei. So Marema answers Halacha Kamazutra. The Halacha is like Mazutra, the more lenient one, because Suffolk Nefashas Lahakol. Because whenever you have a Suffolk involving human life, then we know you're always Makel. So therefore, that's what you do over here. You Makel and you go according to Mazutra's opinion, and specifically according to the Rosh's Girsevet.
What kind of question is that? That, you know, what is the halacha? It's obvious that the halacha is that you have to mechal Shabbos in pikuach nefesh. What's the question?
Maybe not. As we discussed yesterday, there was the question. I mean, on the one hand, obviously a woman giving birth is to a certain extent a matter of pikuach nefesh. On the other hand, there is a point we mentioned yesterday that Rishonim and Achronim bring. The fact of the matter is, birth is a very normal process. I mean, hundreds of thousands of women, or however many it is, go through it every year. And most of them survive.
Which doesn't mean that it's benign. It's very dangerous.
No, fine. But nevertheless, the Gemara still could have thought that, fine, what you can't have done by a Yid, maybe you should have done by a Goy instead. Maybe, again, once Nistama Kever, in particular, once the womb is closed up, and therefore the immediate danger is over, then maybe you should have everything done by a Goy.
Who says?
Well, now says
who?
The danger is over. Okay. The answer obviously is not, which is why we're saying, but again, there still is a difference, even Mahalacha, because what we're saying is as long as Kever Pasuach, it doesn't matter. Even if she specifically says, I don't need it, we still do it. As opposed to once Nistama Kever, if she specifically says, I don't need this done, then we don't have a Yid doing anymore. If it needs to be done, we have it done by a Goy. So there still is that, we still do accept that distinction as valid, Malacha, that there is a difference between Kever Pasuach and Nistama Kever. All we're saying is, within that itself, you had two different ways of understanding what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do. In the first version, in Rav Ashi's version, maybe Nistama Kever, you can't do anything at all. Or in the Rosh's version, if she doesn't say one way or the other, then maybe we can't. So the answer is that no, we don't do that. We go according to Mazutra's version. If we didn't have Mazutra's version, then we would go according to Rav Ashi's. But since we have, then we go according to that. Okay, let's go on. Me'emesai psichas akever. What point is considered psichas akever? At what point do we say that the womb is open enough that these dinim kick in? Amar Abayim Mishar Shateshav Al Mashber. So Abayim says from when she sits on the birth stool, or whatever the equivalent is nowadays, when she's ready to sit on it, in other words, basically. Rav Huna Bered Rav Yeshua, Amar Mishar Shah Dam Shosis V'yored. Rav Huna Bered Rav Yeshua says, when the blood starts flowing. And a third version is when her friends have to carry her in their arms because she's too weak or she's unable to walk by herself anymore. The actual halacha is, since we're not sure which one of these three is, and the Gemara doesn't decide between any of these three, and again, Suffolk Nefashas Lahakol, so any of these three, once any of these three happen, Then already the dinim kick in and we start being Machal Shabbos for her. One thing it points out in Shulchan Aruch is certain other things. For example, calling the midwife, obviously you can't wait if the midwife is far away. And as we said in the Mishnah, you call her from outside the Tchum. Obviously you can't wait until she's already sitting on the birth stool or whatever. By the time the midwife comes, it's going to be way too late. So that kind of thing. So you're allowed to call her earlier. So you're allowed to call for her earlier on Shabbos to allow enough time for her to be there by the time the birth actually takes place. Okay. Ad Masai Psichas HaKever. The next question is, how long after the birth is considered Psichas HaKever? Amar Abaye Shloisha Yomim. So Abaye says 3 days. Rava Amar Mishmed Rav Yehuda Shiva. V'amri Lo Shloishim. So there are three versions, 3, 7, or 30. And actually, we're going to see now that there is actually all three of those are valid, and each one of them has different dinim. Amri Nahaudoi, the Chachamim of Nahauda say, Chaya Gimel Zayin Velamed. When it comes to a woman who gives birth, you have 3 days, 7 days, and 30 days, and each of them has different statuses lahalacha. It's interesting that those spell out the word gezel, what the significance of that is, I don't know. So Gimel, Bein Omra Tzrichani or Bein Omra Loit Tzrichani, whether she says, I need something to be done for me, or whether she doesn't say it, or again, we had the Girsa before, whether she doesn't say one way or the other, which of course there's a big difference, whether she doesn't say anything one way or the other, or whether she specifically says, I don't need it. Anyway, Mechal on Alas Shabbos, either way, during those 3 days, we do anything, we Mechal Shabbos to do anything for her that's necessary for a woman who's just giving birth. Zion, during the next 4 days until the end of 7 days, Omrat Tzrichani Mechal on Alas Shabbos, if she says Tzrichani, if she says I need such and such, then you Mechal Shabbos to do it. Loy Omra Loy Tzrichani, if she says I don't need it, Ein Mechalana as Shabbos, then you're not Mechal Shabbos. And then, in other words, so then either if it's something that could wait until after Shabbos, then you do that, or especially she herself is saying I don't need it, or if it's something that after all the doctors or whoever say that she needs, then actually the truth is in Shulchan Aruch what it says is if the doctors say in that case that she needs, then nevertheless you still do it because okay, she's saying I don't need it. She may not realize what's going on, but the doctors know better. What we mean over here is if she says that she doesn't need it and the doctors don't have an opinion one way or the other, or they also say she doesn't need it, then you can't do it. Then it waits till after Shabbos, or if necessary, you have it done by a goy. Lamed, when it comes to the next 30 days, during the rest of the 30 days, till the end of 30 days, afilo omra tzrichani, during that time, even if she says, I need such and such done for me, ein mechal l'nalas Shabbos, at that point, you're not mechal Shabbos, because at that point, the immediate danger has passed. Aval oisin ha'yide armoi, but in that case, if she does need something or other done, then you have it done through a goy. Kidrav Ola Brei Rabbi Loi, and this is like what Rav Ola, the son of Rabbi Loi, said. Amar Kol Tzorcha Choyla Nasinai De Armoi B'Shabbos. He says that any needs for a choyla can be done by a goy, and here we're talking about a woman who gave birth until 30 days is considered actually says stomach choyla. We consider minastam that she's weak and sick. So therefore, so not sick enough, so not choyla sheyesh bo sakana at this point. At this point, she's a choyla she'ein bo sakana. She's a sick person whose life is not in danger, is not in immediate danger. Therefore, you don't have a heter to be mechal Shabbos, or a yid to be mechal Shabbos for her. But even though normally we would say, normally you have the dinim, as we've learned before, that you're not allowed to tell a goy to do something for you on Shabbos, but for a choyla is one of those exceptions where you're allowed to. The Chidra of Hamnuna, and this is also like what Hamnuna says. The Amr of Hamnuna, Dabar Shein Besakana, Oimel Nochri Vaisa. Anything that where there's no danger involved, meaning, in other words, Rashi says this is something where the let's say even we're talking about the Choyla needs a certain treatment, but it's not like without that treatment his life is going to be in danger. The treatment, it would be good for him to have it, but he needs it, but he doesn't need it immediately. His life is not in danger. So then Rav Hamnuna says, Oymel Nochri V'Oysa, you tell a goy, and he does it. Now, you have an interesting point over here in halacha. The question, Taka, what happens when you have something like that? You have when we say that you can have a goy do things for a sick person, and now we're talking about Dabar She'ein by Sakana. So according to Rashi, it comes out that what it means is like this. For the Chola, for treatments that are needed now, again, we're talking the Chola She'ein by Sakana, for treatments that are needed now, yes, you can have a goy do them for them. The other way around. We would say, in other words, that if it's something that yesh bo sakana, if it's a treatment that he needs right now, and if he doesn't have it, then if he doesn't have it now on Shabbos, then his life is going to be in danger. Then it would come out that you have a yid do it, but if it's not, then you only have a goy do it. And then you have the opinion of the Magid Mishnah, who learns a little bit differently, who says actually that when it comes to a choyla, let me rephrase that. Sorry, when we're talking about a choyla sheyesh bo sakana, we're talking about a choyla whose life is in danger. So what if you have a treatment for such a person where you have, now there's various treatments that need to be done for him. Obviously, there are some treatments that need to be done now, and if not, then his life is going to be in danger. No question, he's a choyla sheyesh bo sakana. You do those for him. What about when you have treatments that don't need to be done right now, but nevertheless, the fact is the guy is a chayla sheyesh b'sakana. Are you allowed to do those? Or do we say that those kinds of things, since those particular treatments are not needed to save his life, then therefore you should have a goy do them or wait until after Shabbos, as the case may be? So both opinions are brought in Shulchan Aruch. The Alter Rebbe summarizes it as follows. You should be noyeg like the shita of so you have the Rashi over here, and then you have the Magid Mishnah is the more lenient, and the Rambam is the more lenient opinion. He's the one who says that for a chola sheyesh b'sakana, you can do everything, whether that particular treatment is needed right now or not. As opposed to, according to Rashi, based on our Gemara over here, only if a for a chola sheyesh b'sakana, only a treatment that's actually needed to save his life can you have a yid do for him on Shabbos. But any other treatment that's not needed to save his life, you would have to have a goy done. So the Alter Rebbe explains in Shulchan Aruch that the proper way to do is like Rashi's opinion. And in particular, if you have goyim around and they're able to do it and it's not going to cause any delay or whatever in the patient's treatment, then by all means, follow the Magid Mishnah's opinion, Rashi's opinion, which is the stricter one. If you don't have a choice, if there's no goy easily around or if there's no goy easily available or whatever, or if you do that, then that's going to cause delays, then you can go ahead and follow the Magid Mishnah's opinion and do anything for chol sheyesh b'sakana, whether it's an essential treatment or not. Okay. Anyway, returning to the matter of a woman who gave birth over here. So again, so we have these various stages: 3 days, 7 days, and 3 days. Many of the Rishonim said you have a Machlokas Rishonim actually. Do we mean 3 calendar days, or do we mean 3 days mess less? So let's say the woman gives birth on Wednesday. Do we say on Wednesday afternoon, let's say, do we say then the 3 days run from there until Shabbos afternoon, or do we say the 3 days run from, you have the rest of Wednesday, all of Thursday, and all of Friday, and by the time Shabbos begins, the three days are over. And Shulchan Aruch actually passes that way, that you go according to calendar days, although there are some achronim. I've seen, for example, what Reb Shlomo Zalman says, and it's brought in Shemitah Shabbos Kilchasa, so that maybe actually not, that maybe actually it would be 3 full days of 24 hours each. Which of course would be a tremendous kola, because if a woman gives birth sometime on Wednesday, then it comes out, according to that, you would be b'chal Shabbos for her, whereas according to black letter law in Shulchan Aruch, you wouldn't. What they do in practice nowadays, I don't know. Okay, onward. The Gemara says, Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, l'chaya lamed yoim. For a woman who gave birth, the amount of time is 30 days. So l'may hilchsa, regarding what? We don't just mean that, like we said before, we have the 3 and the 7, because then he should have said, for a chaya, there's 3, 7, and 30, like the Nahadoi say. Why is he mentioning only the 30? Amri Nahadoi l'tvila. So the Chachamim of Nahadoi said, it means as far as toveling. It's not good for her to tovel during the first 30 days after the birth, because she'll get chilled. Remember, mikvahs in those times weren't heated like they are now. They didn't even have a way of heating mikvahs in those days until basically the Alter Rebbe invented one. So in those days, toveling meant you're going and toveling in a lake or a cave, or a cave was very often something they would tovel in, and the water was quite cold. So during the first 30 days, it's gonna be bad for her. She's gonna catch cold. She's gonna catch a chill. Amar Rava said, Rava says, Lo yamaran ela she'en baila ima. So that actually only applies, Rava says, if her husband is not with her in town. So let's say she's toveling in order to eat kodshim or eat truma or whatever. So then she shouldn't tovel during that time. Kodshim she can't eat during that time anyway, during the first 40 days after the birth. So truma, let's say if she wants to eat truma, then she'd have to tovel. So then she shouldn't, if her husband's not around, she's gonna get chilled. Ava baila ima, but if her husband is with her in town, baila machamama, then afterwards she can have relations with her husband after she tovels, and then her husband will warm her up and she won't catch a cold. Kihod brate de Rav Chista, as in fact we have the example of the daughter of Rav Chista, Tovla begoy tlosin yom and shaloi b'fnei baila. She one time during the first 30 days. She toveled when her husband wasn't in town. The itzdenias, and she caught a cold. Va'am toy la'arsa basri de'rova la'pumpadissa. They carried her bed from Mechuzah, which is where she and Rava lived, all the way to Pumpadissa, where Rava was in the yeshiva, in order that he could have relations with her and warm her up. And there's actually a Tosfos in Nida that mentioned that brings a girsa. Apparently, that was their girsa in the Gemara over here. That it worked. Sure enough, she was healed. It's interesting, actually, in Safaria and the website Safaria, in their translation of the Gemara, which I'm not sure offhand where they got their translation from, they translate the word arsa over here as her bier, meaning the bed that you carry a mess in. So whoever did that translation misunderstood apparently and thought that she actually passed away, and they had to bring her coffin, they had to bring her mitzvah to Rava and Pumbedisa. But in fact, the Gemara means over here that it worked, that they brought her to Pumbedisa. She was still alive, just chilled. And Rava had relations with her, and it helped. Okay. Another din. Omer of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Oisin Madura Lachaya B'Shabbos. The words we most like Shum over here are in parenthesis, because Gemara is going to take up now the question whether we're talking in the winter or the summer. So you're allowed to make a bonfire for a woman who just gave birth on Shabbos in order to warm her up. So the Gemara says, Sovra Mino Lachaya Ein L'Choyleloi. The Chachamim thought what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is only for a woman who just gave birth, you're allowed to do that, not for a regular sick person, and b'maisach shamim ein b'maisach hamaloi, and maybe only during the winter when people are likely to get colder, not during the summer, not during the summer where anyway she can warm up. So v'loihi, it's not so. Loishnachaya v'loishnachayla, doesn't matter whether a woman who gave birth or a sick person, loishnachaya v'maisach shamah, loishnachaya v'maisach hamah, doesn't matter whether in the winter or in the summer, mid itmar, based on this that we say, that Omer of Chiyah Ba'oven, Omer Shmuel, hik is dam v'nitzdan, and if a person let blood, now in those days, they used to very commonly do bloodletting, and then now actually we're going to start talking, now we're going to digress from the top topic of a woman giving birth, and talk all about bloodletting. So when a person let blood and they became chilled, oisin lemedura, filib tkufas tamuz, you make for them a bonfire even in tkufas tamuz, even in the heat, even in the height of the summer, because they're still going to get chilled. Now, you notice that this part, the v'loihi, is in parenthesis, because there are actually different girsois over here. The girsa that we have in front of us in the Gemara is that, yes, that we're saying that you can make a bonfire for them on Shabbos. On the other hand, you have, without the parenthesis, it means not necessarily. It means that it's one thing for a woman who gave birth, also for a person who just had bloodlet. Those two kinds of people are particularly prone to catching a chill, as opposed to other kinds of cholim. Not necessarily do you have a heter to have a yid make a bonfire for them on Shabbos, because instead of making a fire, what you can always do is wrap them up in more warm clothing. So in fact, that's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if it's possible to do that, if it's possible to just wrap them up in warm clothing and that way they won't get chilled, then you do that. Or another possibility, if not, again, is to have a goy do it for them, to build the bonfire. If none of the above, then you can be mako and build a fire for them. But other than that, generally speaking, the heter to make a fire on Shabbos would only be for a woman who gave birth and for a person who had bloodlet, because those two people are particularly prone to getting chilled. Other kinds of sick people, other things being equal, you can wrap them in more blankets or sweaters or what have you. Okay. So now let's talk about this matter of letting blood. So we said that when a person lets blood, so you need to make a fire for them in order to warm them up. So the Gemara gives some examples. Shmuel tzolcho le tachtika de shoga. For Shmuel, one time they broke up for him a tachtika, which is Rashi translates it as a chair, of shoga, which is a kind of very expensive wood. Rashi over here doesn't define what shoga is. In a different Gemara, Rashi translates shoga as a fir tree. So the wood from it is very good quality and very expensive. But one time Shmuel had had bloodletting done to him. Afterwards, they couldn't find any other wood to make a fire for him. So they broke up this chair of this very expensive wood in order to make a fire for him, because that was important, because otherwise he'd get chilled and his life could be in danger. Similarly, Rabbi Yehuda, one time they broke up for him a table made out of yoina. What is yoina? Rashi says that it's some kind of cedar. He brings from his Rebbe Rabbeinu Halevi, who translates it as a cypress tree. And then Rabbeinu Hananel says another possibility, that it's ebony, which is an extremely expensive kind of wood. It's wood from a tree that grows in the tropics. It's extremely expensive. But again, whatever the case, the idea is, again, that they broke it up for him because they didn't have any other wood to use for firewood at that point. The Rabba Tzolcho Le Shashifa, and Rabba, one time they broke up for him a bench Rabbah was, and Rabbah was much poorer than these other Chachamim, so he didn't necessarily have furniture made out of good quality wood, but he had a bench in his house made out of just plain wood. And again, the same idea, one time after bloodletting, they broke it up for him. Aren't you being over on Bal Tashchis? Why are we breaking up a bench in order to make a fire? So he says, that's true, but Bal Tashchis of my body is more important. In this case, it would be dangerous, as we said, to not have a fire after bloodletting, because a person could easily catch a cold. So therefore, if that means if the only wood that's going to be available is a bench, then that's what we're going to use. We're going to use a bench and not worry about the Bal Tashchis thing. So Marsha explains. So then, in that case, so what's Abaya thinking? I mean, Abaya knows good and well that even if it was Shabbos, we would do that. So he explains that actually part of what we said before, as far as the Girsais, as far as making a fire, is, again, we said that maybe when we said that you make a fire for him is talking on Shabbos, or maybe it just means in general on weekdays, it's good to make a fire for a person who had bloodletting. So therefore, so Marsha says that, so in other words, that would, if we understand it that way, then it would mean even a person who had bloodletting done would be only a chayla she'ein bo sakana. And in that case, Abaya is asking, if it's a chayla she'ein bo sakana, then why are we breaking up furniture for it? And Abaya and Rabbah is explaining to him that no, it's actually a chayla she'yesh bo sakana, and therefore Bal Tashchis is, and therefore Bal Tashchis of the body is more important. Okay, is more important to me. Okay. More on this topic. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Lo Olam Yimko Adam Kores Beisai V'Yikach Min Olam L'Raglo. A person should always sell even the beams of his house, if necessary, and buy shoes for his feet. In other words, as important as it is to have a house to live in, it's more important to have shoes to wear. Rashi says the reason is because a person who walks around barefoot in the street is a great bizoyan. She'ein lo chabizui. Rashi says there's no greater bizoyan than walking around barefoot in the street. Marsha says, related to what we were talking about now, about getting chilled. If you walk around barefoot in the street, then you're likely to get chilled. And that could be dangerous to your health. On the other hand, he continues, Hikis damva einle mayocho. What if a person had bloodlet and he has nothing to eat afterwards? Where another important thing after a person has had bloodlet, besides that we're saying that you need to warm him up with a fire or whatever, he also needs to eat something right afterwards to replenish the blood that he lost. So if he doesn't have anything to eat after bloodletting, that's even more important than shoes. Yimkum and olim shabaragla v'yasik man sochet soda. Let him sell the shoes on his feet and use the money from that to buy what he needs for the soda after bloodletting. Okay, the Gemara says, "My tzorchei soda. What are the particular tzorchei soda? What particularly is good to eat after bloodletting?" Rav ama basa or Shmuel ama yayin. Rav says meat. Shmuel says wine. Rav ama basa because it is nafsha cholaf nafsha. You should have a life instead of a life. Al derech hakapasuk nefesh tachas nefesh. But the point is, in other words, you have the life of the animal will help replenish your own, the blood. Okay, the blood itself is taken out during the melicha process, but still, the meat that contained blood will help replenish your blood. Or Shmuel, I'm a yayin. Shmuel says the better thing is wine. Sumka, cholof sumka, because the red of the wine will help replace the lost red. Will help replace the lost red blood. Okay. You want a simon shenimsar. We're gonna have a simon now. We're going to have a simon now for the names of five Amiroyim of what they did after they had bloodletting done. So Gemara says, Shmuel, the Yom HaDavid Milsa, on the day that Shmuel had bloodletting done, Avle Tafshila D'Tachli, they would make for him a dish of cooked spleen. The spleen is an internal organ in an animal, or a person for that matter. It's very red. In fact, the Gemara in Cholin discusses the possibility that maybe it should be considered like the liver. It's considered all blood, and you should have to kasher it specially. And the answer is no. It's like any other regular meat. But it is very, very red. In fact, in the body, one of the things it does is it breaks down red blood cells. And therefore, so Shmuel considered that to be particularly good to eat after bloodletting, because it'll help replenish his red blood cells, his iron, whatever. Rabbi Yochanan followed what we said before. Shmuel himself had said that it's good to drink wine after bloodletting. So Rabbi Yochanan would do that. He would drink wine ad nafik tia miune until the smell of the wine would come out of his ears. So he drank so much wine. Rav Nachman shasi ad kofi tachle. Rav Nachman would drink so much wine that its spleen would float in it. Presumably, it's a bit of a guzma, but I haven't really found any of the mafarshim that really address why the Gemara is using these expressions. Rabbi Yosef shasi ad nafik mirivda de kusilta. Rabbi Yosef would drink wine until it, meaning either the wine itself or maybe the smell of the wine, would come out of the hole that they punctured to do the bloodletting. Rava mahadra achamer batlosa tarpi. Rava would make a Rava would make sure to get wine from a vine that's at least three years since the wine was pressed. Tlasa tarpi literally means three leaves. So Rashi explains every year a grapevine grows new leaves. So from when the grapes were harvested or whatever, the grapevine that it came from has grown three new sets of leaves, meaning that that's at least 3 years old. So older wine he decided was better for this purpose. Also, Rav Nachman Yitzchok says to the Rabbanan, to the Talmidim of his yeshiva, I plead with you, on a day when you have bloodletting, tell your household, meaning your wives, that Nachman, meaning I, am coming to visit you. So Rashi explains, in other words, that it means he's not saying necessarily actually tell them that I'm coming. What he's telling them is act as though I was coming for a visit. If your Rebbe was coming for a visit, obviously you would make the best possible the best possible foods and the largest possible soda. So on a day of Hakaza, he's telling his Talmidim, consider as though I was coming to you for a visit and prepare a meal accordingly. And there are actually some mafoshim that what it actually means is he's telling them that you should pretend as though I'm coming, and that way your wives will make a big suda, and in the end I'm not going to show up obviously, but this way you'll have a big suda for after your bloodletting. And the Gemara says v'chulu yarumi asiri. Now in general, all kinds of tricking people to trick people out of money or goods or whatever are usually also Bar mehai armor de shori, with the exception of the following trick that we're going to describe now in the Gemara, which is allowed. Namely, manda ovid milsa, if a person has had bloodletting, v'loy efshalei, and he can't afford wine, and we're saying that wine is supposed to be something that he's supposed to drink after bloodletting. Lishko zuza macha, what he should do is he should take a worn out coin. So it's the kind of it's a worn-out coin, so worn out that most people would not accept it. If you offered it in a store to buy something, most people would not accept it. Some people might, but in general, people would not accept it because it's so worn out that you can't tell whether it's a legitimate coin or not. So you take that. The lezel l'shev chanusa, you go from one wine store to another. You go to seven different stores. Ad toim shir revisa, until you get to the point where you've tasted a revius of wine. In other words, what you do is like this. In general, in those days, when you went to buy wine, the storekeepers would allow you to first taste it to make sure that it's good wine. You know, you have nowadays, you have a similar thing in some ice cream stores, right, where they'll give you a little taste of the ice cream flavor to see if you want it. So in those days, they did something similar with wine. So what you do is you go to the wine store, you say to the storekeeper, I'd like to buy some wine. Okay. But let me have a taste first. So he gives you a taste. Then you say, okay, good. This wine sounds good. This wine looks good. Let me buy it. And you offer this worn out coin in payment. And the storekeeper is going to say, I don't want this coin. I can't use it. So then, okay, I'm sorry. Well, and I'm sorry to have wasted your time. And you go on to the next store and you keep on doing that until you've gone to seven different stores and you've tasted a total of a revius. So normally you wouldn't be allowed to do such a thing, to go and trick people like that and take away their wine, which doesn't belong to you after all. But in this case, because it's a matter close to pikuach nefesh, then you're allowed to. Okay, the eloi, if you don't even have a worn out coin to use, leichol shev tamri uchmasa, then you should eat seven black dates, velishif mishcha betzidei, rub oil on your temples above the area next to your ears by your payas, the nigni b'shimsha, and sleep in the sun, and that'll also help warm a person up. That'll also help warm a person up after bloodletting if he doesn't have wine to do the job. Okay, so the Gemara tells in this connection, avlet, Avlat was a famous Goyish scientist and astrologer and whatever, who was a friend of Shmuel. We're going to have him later on in the Masechta as well. So he one time, Ashkechei l'Shmuel d'goni b'shimsha, he one time found Shmuel sleeping out in the sun. Amaleh, he says to him, Chakima diyudoi, wise man of the Jewish people. Remember, Avlat was a goy, but he and Shmuel were friends, and he respected Shmuel a lot. So you, wise person of the Jewish people, Bisha mi habitava, how could what's bad for you be good for you? In other words, it's bad. The heat of the sun is bad for a person. So why are you sleeping out in the sun? So Shmuel tells him, because it was a day when I just let blood. And as we just said, a person who let blood is particularly prone to get chilled. So therefore, I'm sleeping out in the sun in order to warm up. The Gemara says, actually, v'loihi. Now, actually, it was not like that. Actually, it was not. Shmuel had not, in fact, had bloodletting done that day. What happened is, ela ika yoyma demali bashimsha b'kole shata, there is a certain day during the year when the sun is particularly good for you. One day throughout the whole year, and that day is Yom HaDenoflebe Tukufas Tammuz, the day on which Tukufas Tammuz, the day on which the summer solstice comes out. Different gear set says on the side over here is Tukufas Tevis, the day that Tukufas Tevis comes out. Anyway, it was Sava La'iglile. So Shmuel knew that, but he didn't want to reveal that secret to Avlat. So he felt that this is important. This is important information that Avlat doesn't need to know. So therefore, instead of telling him that, so instead he told him that I did bloodletting. Okay. So Hekel Beruach Taima Shah Simon. This is a simon for key words from four statements that the Gemara is going to now say about bloodletting and about what you have to do afterwards. Rav Shmuel da Amitavai, Rav and Shmuel both say, Kolam Mekel Besudas Hakozas Dam. Anybody who is Mekel in this Suda after bloodletting, who's not careful about it, to make sure to have food available, Mekilin Loim is a nice Min HaShemayim, then Min HaShemayim, Hashem is more casual, so to speak, with his food. Like Hashem is not going to be so careful to make sure that this guy, so to speak, to make sure that this guy has parnos anymore. V'omrim, because they say, the Beis Din Shamayla says, Hu al-chayav l'chos. Hashem says, this guy doesn't even have concern for his own life. He's not careful to make sure to eat after bloodletting. Ani ochus olav, should I have rachmanos on him? So that's one. Number two, Rav Shmuel da Amri Tavayu. Rav and Shmuel also both say, so these are four statements that Rav and Shmuel both said. So Rav Shmuel da Amri Tavayu, Hai man da Obed Milsa, when a person has had bloodletting done, Loi leisiv hesed heichad korich zika, he should not sit in a place where it's windy. Dilma shofi le umna, because when the bloodletting was done, the bloodletter might have taken out a lot of blood, a lot more than usual. Shofi, it actually explains, comes from an Aramaic word meaning to empty out. So he may have emptied out a lot of blood from him. Umukim le arvi'isa, and left him only a revius of blood. Now, throughout Shas, it's always a common place that a person needs a minimum of a revius of blood to live. It's a little hard to understand medically nowadays. I mean, if a revius is only about 3 or 4 ounces, if a person was down to 3 or 4 ounces nowadays, they'd be dead. So what it means exactly, I'm not sure. It could be it refers to the blood that's actually in the heart itself, where that's, you know, at least for the moment, is the minimum a person needs to live. They're going to need treatment real quick in order to reestablish their blood flow. They're going to need a blood transfusion, but maybe that's the idea, that if the person has less than a revius, then there's nothing that can be done. At least with a revius, they can get a blood transfusion, but I don't know, actually. Anyway, whatever it is, so like this, the woman, the bloodletter might have left him with less than with just exactly a revius. V'asi zik of a shoyf minei. Now, if he's sitting in a windy area, then the wind is going to draw off some more of the blood. V'asi de sakana, and then the guy's going to be in danger because now he has even less than a revius of blood left. Okay, so the Gemara tells in that connection. Shmuel have a rogel v'oven milsa v'beisa d'shev l'veinaya v'aricha. Shmuel used to have bloodletting done in a building with very, very thick walls where they had, each wall was made of 7 whole bricks and a half a brick. A brick in those days was 3 tefachim, was 3 tefachim by 3 tefachim. A half a brick is 1.5 tefachim. So it comes out, therefore, 7 bricks, therefore, is 21 tefachim. And the half a brick is a tefach and a half. So we're talking 22 and a half tefachim. 4 amos is 24 tefachim. So it comes out, the walls were almost 4 amos thick of this place. So that way there'd be no wind comes in. The Gemara says, Yom Echad Ovid, one time Shmuel had bloodletting done, v'argish b'nafshe, and afterwards he felt weak, he felt that he's weaker than normal. Bodek, he checked out what happened with the building that he had the bloodletting done in, and he found one half brick was missing. And whether it means one, whether it was missing all the way around, or whether it means in one particular place a half brick was missing, whatever the case, that allowed a little extra outside air to come in, and therefore that, and that's why Shmuel felt weaker this time. Okay. Rav Shmuel de Amitavai, or another thing Rav and Shmuel both say, Haimad Ovid Milsa, when a person has had the bloodletting done, it's interesting, by the way, the word Ovid Milsa literally means he had a thing done. Why the Gemara uses that expression rather than just saying straight out bloodletting, I don't know. Anyway, lit a midi, first he should taste something while he's there in the place where he had the bloodletting done, but hodur liprik, only then should he leave. The e loy toy midi, because if not, if he doesn't even taste anything, then he's very susceptible to being harmed. E poga b'shachva, if on the way he meets up with a person who passed away, so he meets up with Levaya, yarka ape, that his face is going to turn green. E poga b'man d'kotel nafshe, if he meets up with somebody who killed somebody, missed, then he's going to die. If he doesn't eat something right after he had bloodletting before he even leaves the house. E poga b'dover achar, and if he meets up on the way with a davar acher, meaning a pig, kosher a davar acher, then it's bad for davar acher. He's likely to get saras. There's an association between pigs and saras. Rashi brings from the Gemara in Kedushin that says that there were 10 measures of saras came down, of negoim, came down to the world, and pigs got 9 of them. By the way, you have a somewhat similar thing. You have when a woman leaves the mikveh, you also have the concept that the first thing she sees after she goes out of the mikveh should be something toher. Nowadays, you have the mikveh, she sees the mikveh lady, because otherwise, if she sees, the first thing she sees afterwards is a goy or a behemoth tmeah or something, then it's going to have a bad influence, it's going to have a bad effect on the child that she conceived. So similarly, we're saying over here, after bloodletting is a similar kind of thing where a person is very susceptible and whatever they see is going to have more of an effect on them than usual. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Rav Shmuel da Amri Tavai, or the fourth thing that Rav and Shmuel both said in this connection. Hai mand ovid milsa, when a person has had bloodletting done, lishi purta v'hodur leikum. First, he should wait a little bit. He shouldn't get up as soon as the bloodletting is finished. He should first sit there a little bit. Da amamar, because in fact, we say in a braisa and gittin, hei dvorim kreven l'misi yosim in achayim, there are 5 things that if a person does them, he's closer to death than to life. The elohein, and they are as follows. Ochal v'omad, if a person eats and then right away stands up. Shos of Ahmad, if he drinks and right away stands up. Yoshin of Ahmad, if he sleeps and then right away stands up without giving himself a chance like to wake up. Hikiz Dam Ahmad, or if he let blood, which is what we're talking about over here in the Gemara, and stood up right away. And the fifth one, Shimish Mitasiv Ahmad, if he had relations and then right away stood up. So all of those, in other words, a person needs to sit for a little bit to gather their strength before they stand up. Okay. Amar Shmuel, Shmuel says, continuing on this topic of bloodletting, Pursa de Dama, that the time to be doing bloodletting, Kol Tlus and Yoimin, is every 30 days. In other words, but not more often than that, and maybe also not less often than that. Ubeina Prokim Yamait. Now, when it comes, there comes a point in the person's life, Beina Prokim, between the stages of life, like between when a person is getting older. Rashi says it means when he's 40. So then you might, then he should reduce the frequency. Then instead of doing it every month, then he should do it every other month. Obeina prokim, and then when it comes to another stage in life, Rashi says when he turns 60, then he should yachzav yamayit, then he should reduce it even more and only do it every 3 months. Because the older a person gets to 40 and then a person gets to 60, they're not as strong and they're more likely to get chilled when blood is taken out of them. So therefore, you reduce it as you get older and older. Rabbi Nachanan learns it a little bit differently. He says the first Beina Prakim means when a person reaches 50, then you reduce it to once every other month or once every third month. And the other Beina Prakim is sometime later on in a person's life, when a person gets older, the Rabbi Nachanan doesn't say how much older. The Rambam actually in Hilchos Deis, we're going to be learning it soon. Now that we started a new cycle of Rambam, we're going to be getting to Hilchos Deis soon. So the Rambam actually gives a different schedule for it. The Kesef Mishnah over there explains this is one of those things that depends, different times, different places, Nishtanu Ativim type thing. So this schedule that Shmuel is mentioning over here is good for people in Bavel. People who live in other places should have different schedules. Okay. V'omer Shmuel, also Shmuel says, as far as days of the week, what are the good days of the week to have bloodletting done? Kursa de Dama, the times, the appointed times for letting blood. Chad b'shabsa, arba umale shabsa. Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday are the good days to let blood. Avol sheni v'chamishi loy, but not Monday and Thursday. Why? Only somebody who has schus avos, and it was only somebody who has tremendous schusim to rely on, should let blood on Monday and Thursday. Because on those days, both the basin in Shamayim are, and the basin on earth are sitting. Because in Shamayim, Odom Nidin B'chol Yom, a person is judged every day. You have actually, there's different opinions about that, but there's an opinion in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that Odom Nidin B'chol Yom. Meanwhile, on Earth, the Bate Dinim sit on Mondays and Thursdays. So to Konas Ezra to do that. So those days are days of particular din, and on a day of din is not a good idea to be letting blood, because you need chesed, you need rachamim from Hashem on those days. Now it's interesting. It's actually brought in Shulchan Aruch that Monday and Thursday are Yemei Ratzon, and that's actually why we say Vehurachum on those days, is precisely because they're Yemei Ratzon, and therefore we want to ask Hashem for more Rachmanus. So maybe what it is once we daven that, then it turns it from a Yom Adin into a Yom of Rachmin. But still don't take your chances with bloodletting on those days, Shmuel will say. So Monday and Thursday is out. Shabbos obviously is out. So we have left Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. Now Shmuel had only said Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday. So why not Tuesday? But loss of a Shabbos and my time alloy. Why not do bloodletting on Tuesday? The reason is Mishum de Kaima la Madim Bizovi, because then Madim is powerful during the even hours of the day. Meaning like this. Rashi explains at some length over here. You have like this. There are seven mazolos. There are seven koichve lechas, rather. Seven moving objects in the sky. You have the sun and the moon and five of the planets that have a certain influence on things here on Earth. And the way it works is, the way it works is, aside from their actual orbits, we're not getting into that, but there's an idea. Every hour of the day is under the influence of, every hour of every day is under the influence of one or another of those. They go in order. Rashi explains, they go in the order from the furthest to the closest. So the first one is Shabsoi, which is Saturn, then Tzedek, Jupiter, Madim, Mars, Chama, which is the sun, Noiga, Venus, Koichav is Mercury, and Lavana is the moon. So they go in that order. Shetzim Chenkel is the mnemonic, is the way to remember them. So what it is Rashi explains that like this: Hashem created the sun and moon and stars and planets on Wednesday. So therefore, the night going into Wednesday, which means in other words Tuesday night, is the first hour of that night from 6 to 7. Then Shabsoi, then the influence to the world is given. Hashem gives influence to the world through Shabsoi. The next hour is Tzedek. The next hour after that is Madim, and so forth, and it goes like that. And after 7 hours, then it starts over again. So you have 6 to 7, 7 to 8, 8 to 9, etc. On Tuesday night, then you have Wednesday morning 12 to 1. Wednesday morning 12 to 1 is the seventh of them, and then you start over again from 1 to 2 would be Shabsoi again, and it goes through like that. We know famously a thing that comes from that is we don't make Kiddush on Friday night from 6 to 7, because that's the time when Madim is influential, and we don't want, it's not appropriate to begin Shabbos at that time. We talked about that previously in connection with the two Malachim that come, the good Malach, the Malach Tov and the Malach Ra, and we said one explanation, I think we said from the Avodraham, was that the Malach Tov and Malach Ra represent the Malachim who are in charge of Madim and Tzedek. Tzedek, which is the Jupiter, which is associated with good, with Hashem's Tzedakatas, and Madim, which is associated with war and violence and whatever. So the point is, therefore, so now what happens is, if you calculate it, Rashi says, it comes out that on Tuesday, you have Madim comes out during the eighth hour of the day. Now, in addition, you also have a Gemara in Psachim. You have a Gemara in Psachim, and then sporadically here and there in other places, that mentions that things that come in pairs are extra dangerous. Shadim have more control over it, and whatever. So, therefore, when you have a day when you have a day, when Madim, when it's not, when you have Mazel Madim is doing an even numbered hour of the day, in this case, during the eighth hour, then it's a particularly dangerous day, and therefore it's not good to be letting blood during that time. Now, Tosfos points out that on Wednesday, if you calculate it, it comes out, if you make this calculation, it comes out that Madim is during the 12th hour on Wednesday. But the fact of the matter is people don't usually let blood that late in the day. The eighth hour of the day is between one and two o'clock in the afternoon. It's the middle of the day. That's when people would be doing bloodletting, as opposed to the 12th hour of the day is between 5 and 6 in the evening. That late in the day, people aren't usually doing bloodletting anyway, so we don't have to worry about it. So Tuesday is out because of that confluence of Madim being during an even numbered hour of the day. So Gemara says, what about Malish Shabbos Nami Kaima Bezavi? If you do the same calculation, it comes out that on Friday also Madim comes out during an even numbered hour of the day. Because if we're saying if Madim is the first hour of Friday night, which is Shabbos, then it means it's also 7 hours earlier. It's during the sixth hour of the day. So that's also an even numbered hour. So don't you have the same problem over there also? The answer is sure, but given the doshu beirabim shem psoim Hashem. But since many people are accustomed to let blood on Friday, and the reason is Rashi explains because they were poor. We said before that it's important to eat a good meal after bloodletting, but not everybody could afford that. So what they would do is they would arrange to have their bloodletting done on Shabbos. Especially, we said before we learned in the previous. That it's good to eat fish on Shabbos, and fish is one of those good things. That is one of those things that's good to eat after bloodletting. So, like this, instead of having to spend extra on fish during the week, they would have their bloodletting done on Friday, and therefore the fish for Shabbos would do double duty. It would be l'kavod Shabbos, and it would also help heal them after the bloodletting. So, since people are used to doing that, then we say shoyim psoyim Hashem. Then Hashem watches over the simple, and Hashem is not going to allow them to get harmed by the fact that they're doing it on a day when Madim is doing an even numbered hour. You have a great deal of discussion about the parameters of this concept of Shoyim Psoyim Hashem, when we say it and when we don't. And of course, it's very, very negaya to the events of the last few months. When do we say that, you know, there are certain things that objectively there is a certain degree of danger in them, but nevertheless, since people are used to doing them, then we don't worry about it. And we say that, that you can go ahead and do it and trust in Hashem, versus when do we say that not, that there's a clear and present danger, and therefore you have to take steps about it. So with this whole thing, with the pandemic, there's been a good deal of discussion, pro and con, about when exactly do we say Shem Upsoyim Hashem, and when do we not. Okay. Getting back to the Gemara. Amar Shmuel. Here's more rules about when it's good and not good to have blood let. Dalad duhu dalad, a Wednesday which is also the fourth day of the month. Dalad duhu abesar, or Wednesday which is the 14th of the month. Dalad duhu esrim vaba, or Wednesday which is the 24th of the month. Dalad deleka arabasre, or a Wednesday where there aren't 4 days left in the month after it. So in other words, it's a Wednesday the 27th of the month or later, or if it's a 29 day month and the 26th or later. All of those, sakanta, all of those are a dangerous time. All of those days are a dangerous time to be doing bloodletting. So in other words, we said before that Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday are good times to do bloodletting, but Shmuel is qualifying that and saying not all Wednesdays are good for that. He continues, Mala Yom Tov Cholsha. Rosh Chodesh V'Sheni Loi Cholsha. On Rosh Chodesh, on the day after Rosh Chodesh, if a person has blood let, it'll make him weaker than normal. Shlishi Loi Sakana. If a person does it on the third of the month, then it's an actual danger. Mala Yom Tov Cholsha. On Erev Yom Tov to do it will make a person weak. Mala Yom Da'atzar to Sakanta. But if a person has it done on Erev Shavuos, then it's even worse, then it's an actual danger. The Gozu Rabbanon Akulu Mali Yom Tova Tova Mishum Yom Tova Datzeres. The Chachamim made a gzera. Don't do bloodletting on any erev Yom Tov because it might be similar. Because you're going to confuse it with erev Shavuos. You're going to figure if you're allowed to do it other erev Yom Tov, then you're allowed to do it erev Shavuos as well, and that would be dangerous. In fact, this is actually brought in Shulchan Aruch that there are various things that you're allowed and not allowed to do on erev Pesach, and one of them is you shouldn't be doing bloodletting. why? What's so special about Erev Shavuos? The Nafik Be Ziko Shmei Tavayach and Erev Shavuos, a spirit comes out in the world named Tavayach. And why is it called that? The Lo Kiblu Yisrael Torah. If the Jewish people had not accepted the Torah, have a tovach lahulab sarayu damayu, he would have shechted. Tovach is an Aramaic word meaning to shecht their flesh and their blood. In other words, he would have killed them. So Maharsho explains that ruach is none other than the Yetzihara. So now what happened is when the Jewish people actually did end up accepting the Torah, they killed it. That's why it's called tovoyach, which means the shechted one. But nevertheless, every year, Erev Shavuos, it sort of like wakes up again. And is dangerous, and therefore Erev Shavuos is not a time to be letting blood. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Omer Shmuel, ochal chita v'hikis dam. Now, before we were talking about eating after bloodletting. Now let's talk about eating before bloodletting. If a person ate even one grain of wheat, and then he let blood, lo hikis elo lo isachita. So the letting blood doesn't really accomplish anything. All it does is remove the extra heaviness that he has in the body from eating that one grain of wheat. In other words, basically, you should be letting blood on an empty stomach. Because otherwise, if you ate, then the bloodletting is only helping remove that extra weight in the body. It's not actually helping your health. The Gemara says, "Vahani milulurafua." Now, that's when you're doing bloodletting for healing purposes, as they used to do in those days. But if you're just doing bloodletting because the person has like too much blood or like high blood pressure or whatever, then it works even if a person has blood let after he eats. It still has the same effect. It still reduces his blood pressure. Okay. Next, Hamekizdam, when a person has blood let, seal alder, drinking he should do right away. Drinking right away is good for him. Achila ad chatzi mil. Eating is up until the time it takes to walk a half a mil. A mil, you have different opinions. A post-skim is any time between 18 and 24 minutes. So it would be any time between 9 and 12 minutes. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Ibailahu, shsila alter mali. What does that mean? Does it mean that if a person drinks right away, as soon as the moment the bloodletting is finished, only then is it good for him? Ava basa hachi koshi. But if he waits any longer than that, then it's bad for him. Or does it mean that at that point, it's not good for him, it's not bad for him, it's just, it won't help, but it won't hurt either. So we're not sure. So you should drink as soon as possible afterwards. Ibailahu, similarly, they had a question. Achila ad chatzi mil hu dekamali. Does it mean that you should eat within the time it takes to walk half a mil, and then it's good for you? Ha basa hachi umikame hachi kashi. And it means, in other words, that if you ate within that amount of time, less than a half a mil before you finish the bloodletting, or more than a half a mil afterwards, then it's bad for you. Aduma le kashi vle mali. Or maybe it means it's not good for you, it's not bad for you. Again, teiku. More on this topic. Machriz Rav. Rav announced like this. Mea kori bezuza. When it comes to what you should eat after bloodletting, mea kori, if they're selling 100 pumpkins, bezuza, if they're selling for one zuz, then buy them, because then fine, you're getting a good deal. It's very cheap. But otherwise, don't bother, because really pumpkins are not something so good. So therefore, don't bother. Also, Meir Reishi Bezuzah, the same thing. If they're selling a hundred animal heads for a zuz, then buy them, because then it's worthwhile. But otherwise, don't bother, because they're not really that good for you. Meir Sfami V'loy Klum. If they're selling 100 lips of animals, then even if they're selling them for nothing, don't bother, because those really are not good for you. Those are even worse than the pumpkins or the head of the animals. At least those have some benefit for you. These have no benefit at all, so don't even bother spending the one zuz on them. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosef, ki avinon bei Rav Huna. So Rav Yosef says, now I understand something. When we were in the yeshiva of Rav Huna, on a day when the Chachamim were feeling lazy and weren't learning so well, by the way, this is where we get the expression Yom de Pagra for Chassidish Yom Tov. Literally, it means a day of laziness. It means like a day, like after a Fabring and the night before, whatever, people are not up to learning and then davening and whatever with the same, you know, necessarily with the same enthusiasm as usual. So therefore, we nickname it a Yom de Pagra. Anyway, so on a day when the Chachamim were tired and lazy and not coming to the Bais Medrash, Amri, they used to say, "Ha'idna yomid esfami." Today is a day of lips. V'lo yadayna, my kamri. So Rabbi Yosef says, I never understood what that meant. Now I understand, once I heard the statement of Rab, that lips of an animal are completely worthless. So I understand what it means is, in effect, they were saying today was a worthless day. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos points out, what on earth does that have anything to do with what we were talking about? All this time we've been talking about letting blood, and all of a sudden now we're talking about what kind of foods are good for you or not. So Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hanano a different explanation. The first one is not Mea Kori, but Mea Karni, Bezoza. A Karen is a horn. It's also the name of the instrument that they used to use in those days for bloodletting, to draw out the blood, sort of like nowadays they use syringes and tubes for that purpose. In those days, they would use a horn. So therefore, what it means is, there was a fixed price that you could arrange with somebody. You could arrange with a bloodletter or with a barber that he'll take 100 times. He'll take blood for you 100 times for one zuz. And similarly, when it comes to getting a haircut, you could arrange with him that you'll get 100 haircuts for one zuz. In other words, you would arrange with him that I'm going to be a regular customer of yours, and I'm paying you a zuz in advance. And however often I need bloodletting, or however often I need a haircut, then you're going to do it for me. And therefore, then the guy's obligated to do it, even if it comes out 100 times, even if it's not at all cost effective for him. But when it comes to svami over here, means not so much lips, but rather mustaches, then nothing, because when you pay the person to shave you or to let your blood, then part of the deal would also be that he'd trim his mustache. So what happens if you have a person is spending, a barber one day is spending all day trimming people's mustaches? He's not earning any money for that, because the mustache nobody pays for, because you get it as a package deal together with a haircut or bloodletting. So we're saying that when you have a day when people are working and you didn't accomplish anything, you called it Yom HaSfami, a day of mustaches, because you didn't accomplish anything useful. So the Mishnah had said, continuing on the topic of what you're allowed to do for the baby once it's born, we said v'kosher in a tabu. The Tanakama had said that you're allowed to only tie up the umbilical cord, not actually cut it off, and Rabbi Yossi said you can actually cut it off. So let's learn about that. Tana Rabbanan, kosher na tabur. You're allowed to tie off the umbilical cord on Shabbos, but not cut it off. Rabbi Yossi emaf choschin. Rabbi Yossi says you're allowed to cut it off as well. And most of the poskim paskin like Rabbi Yossi, so you're allowed to do that. The tomnin ashulia, you're also allowed on Shabbos to bury the shulia, the placenta, in something in order to warm it up. Kadesh yecham avlad, in order that the baby should warm up. It was kind of a skula thing. I mean, at this point, the placenta is not attached to the baby anymore, but there was some kind of skula, there was some kind of known skula that if you keep the placenta warm, then the baby will also stay warm. Amar Reb Shimon Gamliel, so Reb Shimon Gamliel clarifies, what do you bury the shulia in to keep it warm? Bnois malachim tomnis besfalim shel shemen. Princesses, daughters of kings, would bury the shulia in basins of oil to keep it warm. Bnei sashirim besfugin shel tzemer. Rich girls' daughters, rich people's daughters would bury it in pieces of wool. Bnei saniim b'mochin. Poor girls bury it in stuffing, like stuffing from pillows or other such kind of thing, worn out clothing or whatever. But you always do it. It helps. It's a refuah to help heal, to help warm up the child. Okay. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Abba, Amar Rav Halacha Ki Rav Yosi. So there you go. The halacha is like Rav Yosi. So okay, you do have actually that on the side over here. It says that some of the Rishonim don't have that girsa, but nevertheless, most of the Rishonim do end up passing it like Rav Yosi anyway. Okay, the Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Bavu, Amar Rav, Moedim Chacham, Rav Yosi, B'tabur Shal Shnei Tinoikas. The Chachamim do agree with Rav Yosi when it comes to, if you have twins that share one placenta and both of their umbilical cords are attached to it, the Chachamim will agree that you're allowed to cut it off and not just, that you're allowed to cut it off and not just, that you're allowed to cut it off and not just, not just tie it off. My time at the Menatri Adodi, and the reason is because otherwise those two children pull one against the other, and therefore they're likely to pull out their intestines. So each one is going to be pulling in their direction, so therefore you're allowed to cut it off. Okay. V'amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Bav, V'amar Rav, Kol ha'amar v'parashas toichacha oisim l'cha. Everything that's said in the parasha of Toichacha in Yechezkel are things that you're allowed to do for a woman who gave birth on Shabbos. Meaning, in other words, You have in Perek Tes Zayin of Yechezkel gives a long metaphor where Hashem, where the Navi in Hashem's name compares the Jewish people to a baby that was abandoned at birth, and then a person comes by and says that's where we get that pasuk, and the next one it by Bris and then the Haggadah from, and then he continues that later on this man comes back and he takes this girl and takes care of her and dresses her in all kinds of finery and everything. And it's a metaphor, of course, for Hashem and the Jewish people, what Hashem did for us, looking after us in Mitzrayim and then taking us out of Mitzrayim and giving us all kinds of good, and then how ungrateful the Jewish people were that they worshipped Avodah Zarah and did other Averes. Anyway, so everything that says in that parasha that wasn't done for that baby in the Mashal, you're allowed to do for a baby on Shabbos. Shenema, the pasuk says, Umodei Sayich, when you were born, B'yom Huledes Oisach, on the day that you were born, Loi Koras Shorech, your umbilical cord was not cut, you were not washed with water to smooth out your skin. You were not salted. Rashi seems to understand that we're partially talking about pouring salt on the baby's skin, which helps harden it and toughen it a little bit. The Rambam writes that it actually means that they use some kind of spice powder, like nowadays you use baby powder. And you were not swaddled. You weren't wrapped up tightly in clothes. So, when it says your birth on the day you were born, so from here we see that you're allowed to help at the birth on Shabbos, as we said in the Mishnah, to actually pull the baby out of the womb and so forth. We said your umbilical cord was not cut. So from here we see you're allowed to cut the umbilical cord on Shabbos. The point is, Tosfos says that since the Pasuk is mentioning that these things were not done for this baby, that implies the Pasuk is trying to show us how bad a situation this baby was in. So that in the Mashal, representing the Jewish people in the Nimshal, so therefore all these things are matters of tzar, and therefore you're allowed to do them. In fact, Tosfos says there's actually no Isur D'oraisa in any of them anyway, so the Chachamim are saying do them on Shabbos. Okay. So from here we see that you cut the umbilical cord on Shabbos. When it says you weren't washed with water to smooth out and clean up your skin, from here we see that you wash the baby with water on Shabbos. When it says you weren't salted or powdered, so from here we see that you salt or powder the baby on Shabbos. And we said you weren't swaddled, from here we see that you swaddle the baby on Shabbos, which means you wrap them tightly in clothing and put like a wide belt around it in order to get all of their joints back into position. Now, we learned previously in the previous perek, we actually had a machlokas about asubi yinuka, and we talked over there about various possibilities. Does it mean that we had a machlokas there whether asubi yinuka is allowed on Shabbos or not? We had a machlokas from Nachman and Oshesius. So one possibility is that asubi yinuka means to actually manipulate the joints directly, whereas here we're talking about just wrapping the baby in a cloth and automatically the joints get back into place by wrapping the cloth tightly. Or does it mean, Bechla, we talked over there, Tosfos had talked about that Asubi Yanuka might not even be anything to do with putting the baby's joints back into place, but rather something else entirely, getting out a cartilage that fell into the that falls down into the throat or whatever. Okay. So you do all these things for a baby on Shabbos because Tosfos says there's no actual Isur D'oraisa in any of them anyway, so therefore there's no problem. It would have just been Osur D'rabbanan, in this case the Chacham Mamata, all of them. The Rambam writes a little differently, that at least some of these things, the baby's life would actually be in danger without them, and therefore you're allowed to do them on Shabbos. Okay. Hadran Aloch Mufanin. Okay. Shkoyach, everyone.
Thank you, Rabbi. Is it busy? Is it busy where you